want to do bad things.
That's real, yo. That's real at all, man. The more money you make, the more problems you get. And jealousy and envy is something that comes with the territory, man. A lot of people, it's just negative energy, like my man Puff said.
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of?
They speak English and what?
What?
English, mother, do you speak it?
Man, you've been doing all this dope producing. You ain't had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
Welcome to the Spurs Cast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast.
Hey, by the way, no politics, because oh my gosh,
no,
that game still won. That game still won. Oh no, I don't even know why I even debated that much. So there was this one guy who I thought was going to bring up intellectual political stuff, and he would just bring up the Spurs with political talk. So no, I mean no, don't even mention any political stuff.
Okay, done.
Done.
Paul, just kidding. Yeah, always.
Congratulations, you have arrived at episode 413 of the Spurs Cast, the one and only podcast brought to you, of course, by ProjectSpurs.com. I should say it's the first podcast covering the Spurs. I think that's still true. Anyway, we're rolling with it. Guys, this is a long pod tonight. Me and my good buddy and running mate here, Jose Grijalva, we are joined by the likes of Mr. Ben Bornstein, and Project Spurs' own Paul Garcia. This is a podcast where we are previewing the NBA. We're going to do this in two. We're going to do this podcast, start to finish, will be about the East, and then we'll record another one in a few days and release it for the West. So make sure to go all the way through this one with us, and then we'll do the Western Conference here in a couple of days. Guys, everybody's online. Everybody doing well tonight?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, kinda.
What's wrong? What could be going better for you, sir?
It was back in chest day, so it's very tiring. But I'm glad to be here with you guys to discuss basketball.
Every day is chest day. Every day.
Every day is leg day. I try to do like 5 days a week.
Look at this guy.
So I need to get some tips from you because I've spent the past maybe 3 weeks basically on the road the entire time, and in 3 weeks I've gained 15 pounds of just a pure fat.
Right. That doesn't sound good.
It's not. It's sure as hell isn't healthy. But it's my life now, guys. The dad bod is setting in pretty nicely.
Oh no!
If I do have to say so myself.
If you watch The Office, you know, just walk, when you walk, just squeeze your butt cheeks. It helps with your knees too. If you're doing the glutes.
Simply stunning.
There you go. I'm looking at my dog over here, and he's a pug, and my pug and I basically have the same body type right now.
Oh, that makes me a little sad.
Just round. Ben, how have you been, man? We haven't heard from you in a long time.
I know. I've been down in the trenches, man, doing football stuff for a while there.
What is that?
You found
doing
no friends.
Pretty well, man. No. Oh, with no friends.
With no friends. Well, I hope that you're ready to talk Eastern Conference because you are our go-to Eastern Conference leader.
Absolutely. I'm about that life.
Well, that's good to know. And Paul, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Unfortunately, I've been out of football since like week two when Notre Dame lost. And then NFL, I just care about one team, the Cardinals right now. So, you know, that's about it. So.
Why are you
football playing tonight?
Yeah, we're playing right now a little bit. So.
Paul, why are you a Cardinals fan? How did that happen?
I'm honestly not a big NFL guy at all. I don't really have a allegiance to a team. But my brother, he knew the running back David Johnson pretty well. So I met David a few times. He's a really cool guy. So I'm kind of just cheering for him and the team. So right now they're like my bandwagon team the last 2 years.
Nice.
No, bro. No Arizona team is a bandwagon team. You're safe on that.
Jeez.
So heel genius. Heel Jose here. That's guys, my nickname. The way. Oh, you've called. You guys have called me that. No, you haven't. Never mind. That is my actual nickname. Around here, I'm known as Genius. When people call me Jose here, it's kind of like, you know, who is that guy? But you know,
he's Heel Jose. That's who he is.
Exactly.
Well, that's a great story. Thanks for telling me. Guys, let's get into the Eastern Conference. What we're going to do is we'll go through each one of the divisions. We'll talk about individual team stories. We'll try to you know predict how that team's going to do. Paul did actual research for this podcast, which is not surprising, but can give us Vegas odds for over-under or set the over-under, and we could talk about that and their win total. And then at the end of this, I'd like to rank the East 1 through 8, try to pick playoff seeding. And then ask a couple of other questions. So I hope you are as ready as I am to kick off this season, like we always do, with this NBA preview. We're going to start out in the Atlantic Division. And, guys, probably one of the teams that I don't know if they're right there on the cusp. Well, they're certainly on the cusp, but some may even predict them to be favorites. Of course, I'm talking about the Boston Celtics. I want to start with Ben, but with Boston, what about Boston makes you think that perhaps they're on the cusp, or do you even feel like they're right there ready to break through to compete in the East?
Yes, they are so close to being the best team in the East this year. They went out, they signed Al Horford, they lost Evan Turner, which is for the better. They got rid of Jared Sollinger for the better, and they went out and got Gerald Green. They have Jaylen Brown coming on, and they had a draft full of rookies who they can kind of experiment with. And they have Terry Rozier, who they've been hoping to develop, and they have James Young, who they've been hoping to develop. So what they're hoping to see is that these guys can step up, play some solid minutes, give them good production, and they're going to be able to get out, run on people. That, you know, Al Horford doesn't have to be a go-to scorer, which is good. You can leave that to Isaiah Thomas. You have your defensive guard in Avery Bradley. You have Jay Crowder. You have R.J. Hunter, who's come on as a nice shooter. And they went out and they got Demetrius Jackson as well. He should be fun to watch. You know, their roster is still at 20 or so guys because they haven't cut anybody yet, which they'll have to do before the season opener. But you know, they have some interesting names on here. Obviously, Elliot is going to be back. Mickey is okay. Marcus Smart is developing. So they have a really nice young core, and they have a decent mix of veterans in there who can teach them how to win, and they know how to win. So I think the Celtics will be the number two team in the East behind the Cavs.
Already with the prediction. Paul, let me ask you about Isaiah Thomas specifically. Last year, he's at 22 points a game, number one scorer on that team. Even with Al Horford coming over, do you expect Isaiah Thomas to put up those kind of numbers, or is he going to have to share the ball? Or what's the season look like for Isaiah?
I think somewhere like around 18 points, maybe like a 4-point decrease, but heading his assists go up definitely. You know, there's going to be last year was really easy, you know, the fourth quarter crunch time to really hone in on Isaiah. Teams could kind of overload and kind of double team him or get the ball out of his hands because he was Boston's best player offensively. So now that you have Horford there, they have a guy they can go to in the post. They can run pick and pops with pick and rolls. So I think that, you know, like Ben said, Isaiah is really going to feel a little bit more comfortable. He's going to have a lot more versatility to offer to the team. And just their kind of lineups, especially defensively, that they're going to be able to throw out on the floor are going to be really dangerous for some of the Eastern Conference teams.
So, Jose, with Al Horford joining there, what can you expect of Al Horford in a new system? Do you think he's going to adjust really well? What do you predict for Al Horford?
Well, I think he'll adjust because, you know, even though he's a really solid option, I've never seen him as the option, not even with the Hawks. You know, you had Josh Smith there for a while. You had Jeff Teague, you know, taking up touches. You know, I think what he does in Boston is he slows the game down. So, you know, especially with these young guys who just want to get up and score, just throw up shots. He's kind of like their Tim Duncan, you know, where if they can't score, just throw it down to him and he'll try to make something happen. I think, you know, they're all going to really mature off of that. You know, they're going to take the game slowly. And then when they can go out and run, they're going to obviously run because they have, as Paul mentioned, Isaiah Thomas, who's a quick guy. They have Avery Bradley, Crowder, Amir Johnson, who could, you know, stretch the floor in some possessions. So I think he's going to be that calming figure that they needed that they didn't have before, especially during last season when they really overachieved. And now I think the pressure's on them to really stabilize as a team.
So staying out east, you know what? Let's do – I was going to jump over to the Brooklyn Nets because I'm just so damn excited about Jeremy Lin back in New York. But let's do an over-under real quick to start this off right. Paul, what's the over-under set for the Boston Celtics this year?
Okay, so like as Ben said, they're actually expected to finish second in the East with 52.5 wins is their over-under, and they actually are expected to challenge Cleveland for the number one seed. Cleveland's we'll get to the Cavs later, but you know it's only a few games where Boston can be the team if Cleveland kind of coasts this season where they can be with number one seed by the end of the year. So it is 52.5, and I think they will go over with that.
So I'm starting to take notes because that's our first. It's our first team to review, and it's our first disagreement, at least for me. 52. What were they last year in terms of wins?
They were close to 49, I think, or 48. I'll try to look it up.
See, I look at them somewhere else. I think that they gel as a team. I don't think that bringing in Al Horford really. I think it does a lot of good things for you. I don't think it disrupts the team chemistry like we may say about Golden State, perhaps later on in the year.
Celtics had 48 wins last year.
48 wins. 40. See, I could see them being right back there. That's a tough one. 52.5 wins. You know what? We'll never move on if we argue about each over under. So if you're listening to this, just know it's 52.5 wins predicted to be number two in the East. Let's go to the Brooklyn Nets and Linsanity. Are they calling it Linsanity again, or do they come up with another nickname, Jose? And what do you think about Brooklyn?
I think Linsanity comes back. I don't know. Can you even come up with another nickname? I just, it's kind of like genius. It sticks, you know? I'm looking at the real GM depth chart here, and they have Randy Foy as the starting shooting guard. Ryan Hollins Jefferson as the three, Trevor Booker as the four, Brooke Lopez as the five. Gravis Vasquez as the backup point guard. That Scola guy at the backup four. Bogdanovich at the backup three. I kind of like this team, especially out in the East. If Lin, you know, if they can run this two-point guard set, you know, it really takes the pressure off of him. You know, Foy can hit some open shots. Lin can, you know, if he's given the freedom to run the way he wants to run the offense, right, he's been very successful. So I'm liking this team. I'm liking the makeup. I think they can make some noise out in the East because not a lot of people remember the Nets, especially the Brooklyn Nets. Those jerseys are just so awful and plain that people just forget about them, you know, and especially
that's
the
accurate
Nets. Especially the Knicks, how they're just gonna—they've been resurrected with all these has-been players, and you know they're trying to make some noise. I see them going under the radar, but really overachieving for what they can do.
See, Jeremy Lin is in an awesome position here because he comes back to New York. Remember the first time he was in New York, he really wasn't paired with anybody. I mean, of course, Melo was there, but wasn't he injured the first time around? I just remember Jeremy Lin getting the ball and doing whatever he wanted with the ball, no expectations. Like Jose was saying, he could drive in whenever he wanted to, and he kind of took over games. And then since then, at all of his other stops, he's always been paired up with somebody else that's commanded the ball. You think of what happened in Houston with Dwight Howard, James Harden, right? And then you go to out in L.A., and he's sitting there with Kobe, Kemba Walker out there in Charlotte. So you're always paired with somebody else who's going to be the number one option. And I look at this starting five, and I'm not sure who else could possibly be the number one option. It doesn't look like the team that can keep going down low to Brook Lopez. It doesn't look like it's set up that way with two point guards. With Jose, I think Jeremy Lin could do a lot of good things, you know, given some freedom.
Unfortunately, I think that's why they're not going to be very good, because if Jeremy Lin is your top option, you're probably not going to be a very good team. I mean, if you look at the rest of this lineup, like Jose was saying, half of their starting lineup are guys who shouldn't be starting. Randy Foy should not be your starter. He is old. He was born in 1983. I'll put it that way. He is old. Okay?
Thanks a lot.
And sorry. And
he should be hosting a podcast.
Yeah,
he
should be hosting a podcast.
But, I mean, they have Trevor Booker, who's okay. He's solid off the bench. They have Chase Budinger. They were dumb enough to take a flyer on Anthony Bennett. They said they pressed the screw it button and said, sure, we'll sign Anthony Bennett. What could possibly go wrong? Only everything. I mean, they have Chris McCullough, and by the way, it's General Grievous, Jose. It's General Grievous Vasquez, just for the record. They have Joe Harris, Justin Hamilton, like just a bunch of dudes you've never heard of. This team is, they might overachieve, but they're still going to be terrible, and they are not making the playoffs.
I would go. Well, here, let me give you all the over under. So they are actually expected to finish the worst in the East at number. they're supposed to only win 20 and a half games. So they are, yeah, they're definitely the last amazing team in the East, according to Vegas. Like you guys said, I mean, I kind of agree with y'all, especially Ben. You know, I don't think they're gonna do very much, have a lot of success. But one thing to note, though, is that Sean Marks is the new GM, you know, former Spurs guy. They just hired a former Atlanta assistant coach. So I think this is the year where, obviously, there's not a lot of talent here, but you're at least building in the system. It's almost like they're like the version of the Austin Spurs right now, where they're just going to get that coaching terminology, the principles, the fundamentals built into their team. Still get a lot of shots and do pretty good. Is Bojan Bogdanovic? He had a really good Olympics over with Croatia over the summer. So I think him and Lin would definitely be the number one and two scorers. And then you know, I think Lopez will eventually get hurt, like he always does. They'll shut him down at some point. So Brooks said they're kind of their guy in the paint. But yeah, I mean, 20 and a half wins. That's kind of what I mean. I think that would be shocking if they even made it to 20 with this roster.
You know what? Keep me optimistic. They'll win more than 30. I like this team. I don't know why you guys are all hating. I love Jeremy Lin. I wish the Spurs would have gotten him.
You have irrational confidence in this team. You are the Gary Neal of this podcast.
I'm good at least for one game, right? For one finals game. This might be it.
So let's move across town to the New York Knicks. And this is a team that's been getting tons of offseason hype. Derrick Rose goes over there. Of course, this will be the second year of Kristaps Porzingis. Joakim Noah heads that way. Courtney Lee, I think, is going to do really, really well for what he does. And, of course, you've got Melo there, who's prolific, you know, scorer. What I like, and you might give me hell about this, I really like Brandon Jennings on the bench. I don't think it's a difference maker, but I love the fact seeing him back after that Achilles tear. If any of you guys, I've never torn my Achilles, but I got hit with a golf club in the Achilles one time. And that thing was, it killed me for like 6 months. And so I couldn't imagine actually tearing it. And the guy coming back, I think that's unbelievable. You know, he's a 7-point a game guy. So I don't think he's going to, you know, set the way or set the pace or anything like that. But I think he gives you a nice option off the bench. I'm really curious just to see what they do with sharing the ball with Porzingis. He's 14 points per game last year, 7 rebounds per game. And that's actually where I thought he was going to get destroyed, was rebounding the ball. And he did fantastic. I mean, 7 points a game in your rookie year, or 7 rebounds a game in your rookie year, 1.3 assists. You know, obviously this guy is the future there in New York. And balancing that out with Carmelo, I think, is always going to be the story. And then, of course, you got the two Chicago guys, Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, moving over. I think Noah, you know, has a big bag of nothing at this stage in his career, but it's interesting to see him over there. Maybe that breathes new life into his career. I mean, Paul, what do you think about the Knicks?
You know, if they can just keep it in place, I mean, we're gonna give our playoffs teams later on, but I kind of think that, you know, if everything's there, it's just more their injuries and then also, you know, getting that chemistry together. I think that they can put together a good solid game plan and maintain their health. They think they should be just the pure talent on that team. Obviously, it's older talent, but, you know, if they run their system through Melo, Porzingis, and like you said, Ryan, I really like Brandon Jennings off the bench. You know, and Derrick Rose, he's kind of questionable right now because of his he has a court situation going on out in the public side. But yeah, I think that they also got brought in, like you said, Courtney Lee, a really good shooter, can play some defense. So I think that if they can kind of keep their health maintained, they should be able to vie for like that 7-8 seed in the playoff. And just a heads up, Vegas does have them as the ninth team to finish at 38 and a half wins.
The ninth?
Ninth, yeah, 38.5 wins.
Wow. Big jump. Mr. Jose?
You know, I'm kind of hot and cold about this team. Like Paul said, you know, they have the talent. You know, Derrick Rose, and I like you guys said, I like Brandon Jennings off the bench because I think he could play that 1-2 role. You know, I think you could pair him with Derrick Rose in some situations. You know, maybe move Courtney Lee to the 3. You know, try to play some small ball. You know, maybe move Melo again to the 4. You know, Joakim. It's Joakim, right? Because I just felt weird. Okay, thank you. Come on, Ryan, really?
He is not like Joakim Phoenix. He's not the same thing.
Joakim Noah.
Yeah, not the same.
And the only thing I fear is the triangle. You know, I know Hornacek has, you know, sort of tweaked it where it's more of a running style. You know, I discuss this with Paul all the time, you know, as far as, you know, the sets and all this stuff. I like the horn set, you know, if you're a coaching nut or you like to, you know, look at players that you're coaching, you know, whatever level, you know, look up that horn set, you know, it's very versatile. I'd like something like that for this team because if you go triangle, that's really just focusing on at least two or three guys, and these guys are not spot-up shooters. Derrick Rose is not going to be in the corner waiting for a shot or moving off the ball just to see if he might get it. You know, these guys are just so used to it. Off the you know, not really off topic, but the reason I say this is because when I coached in the summer league, I had five kids who were really the number one options, you know, on every other team. So, I mean, I had five really good starters. I used that horn set because you could really run different plays through different guys. I mean, it's so versatile. So, you know, if he would move to a horn set, I would really be encouraged with this team. I like players. I just don't think the coaching is going to really do well for this team.
This team scares me a little bit. You know, this team would have won the NBA title in 2011. But now these guys are older, and Paul touched on this. Derrick Rose could miss a decent portion of the season because of his court case. That's not going away anytime soon. If he misses time, Brandon Jennings could become your starter. And while he's a decent option, that guy should not be your starter. That could really hamper this team if Derrick Rose's court case takes longer than the Knicks brass seems to think it will. I mean, I get this feeling that they really don't have any concept of what is happening with the trial, and that they think, they'll go into court one or two times, then it'll be over. And I just don't see that happening with the way this has all come about. I mean, Derrick Rose tried to get a mistrial that was denied, so this is not going to be easy. But you know, to bring it back a little bit, not damper everyone's mood, the Knicks do have a guy whose name is Mindaugas Kuzminskas, who I doubt will make the team by the time they make cuts, but that is a fun name. And they do have other pieces. Obviously, Kristaps Porzingis, who is the resident owner on the Knicks of the most awesome name. So, you know, Mindaugas is going to have to fight him for that one. But if Derrick Rose does come back fairly soon and is able to play, they could be a decent team. But I'm all about the let Ron Baker be great train. So I'm just hoping he gets time because that's my boy. Loved watching him at Wichita State, even though it's not a state.
A quick note, Ben. Mindaugas is on a guaranteed deal because they brought him over. He was one of Porzingis' early teammates. So
yes. Yeah,
he's supposed to be on the roster, final roster.
Phenomenal. Thank you. Okay, perfect. So now we get to have a whole discussion all year about who has the better name. Courtney Lee is a solid player. Really like him. Saw him up close in Orlando for a while there. Actually thought they got rid of him too soon, even after that whole finals debacle. Kylo Quinn, very solid forward and center. He's kind of a hustle guy, as is Marshall Plumlee, who's 7 feet tall. Again, you can't teach height. So I think this Knicks team could win. I think they'll win more than that 38.5 games, but it'll only be like 39 or 40, and I still don't think they're going to get in the playoffs.
Well, down from New York in Philly, you got Ben Simmons with a broken foot. You got a brand new front office. You've got three big men, and there's only two spots for him. Joel Embiid's really come on in preseason. He's looked great. New Orleans Noel's already talking about there's too many, you know, it's too crowded at the 4 and 5 position. So there looks to be even a little bit of turmoil there. There's certainly some trade bait. The broken foot, I think, really sets them back. Not that anybody was predicting them to really make a significant move, unless you guys told me different. But, you know, Jose, what do you think about Philadelphia's situation, and then will they move one of those big men?
I mean, they have the cap space to move, and, you know, to really move a small contract, you know, great talent for, you know, I guess a more expensive option. But really, where's that going to get you? I think this season you have to run with this team, see what it gets you. Get, you know, maybe tank. Get the number one pick again, and then go into free agency and try to build around Ben Simmons when he's healthier. You know, they were saying that how he gained all this weight really fast attributed to it. You know, I think he should probably be more cautious, you know, especially after this injury, because, you know, big men and lower body injuries, foot injury, really, you know, tends to hamper them a long time. I think Joel's going to have he's a rookie this year, technically, right?
Yes, and Embiid is eligible for Rookie of the Year.
So I think this guy's going to be Rookie of the Year if he stays healthy. There's no other option there. I don't agree that they'll have more wins than the Brooklyn Nets, as Paul said. You know, Vegas has them being the worst team. I think this is going to be really the worst team. They're just going to need, get the number one pick again, hopefully. And, I mean, then you start building again. Maybe if Manu Ginobili would have taken that offer, we'd be talking different. Maybe a fourth seed, third seed out in the East. Homer talk, you know. But, you know, I really don't like this team. There's nothing about this team except the center position. And I think he's going to run away with Rookie of the Year because of that.
I'm seeing Joel Embiid. I'm seeing Nerlens Noel getting moved before the trade deadline. He's kind of already positioned himself with his comments, and I think he kind of wants out because he realizes he has almost no offensive game, and when Jahlil Okafor is back, they're going to commit to him because he's a proven post scorer, and Joel Embiid is a guy who can stretch the floor a little bit for him. He can shoot out, you know, in the mid-range, and he's extending his range, and Nerlens Noel can pretty much only shoot at the rim. So I think if there's going to be a guy who gets moved, it's Nerlens Noel. But if for some reason they stick with all of these guys and comes back from his injury during the year, I mean, can you possibly play all of those guys at the same time with Ben Simmons potentially playing a point forward spot? I mean, this could be the most experimental team we see this year. So even if they're going to be terrible, which they are, they're going to, like Jose said, they'll probably be the worst team in the East, not the Nets. But those two will be fighting really hard for it. I think they'll be somewhat fun to watch just because of the weird lineups they're going to have. They're going to have these mega large lineups.
Paul, what do you think? Where first off, what's the over under in them? Because Ben seems to think that they're going to be worse than Brooklyn.
Okay,
where do you think they're going to be, or where are they going to be as far as Vegas says? And then, what are your thoughts on them?
Okay, so yeah, they're supposed to finish this four games better than Brooklyn. So 24.5 is their over under, 14th in the East. Like you guys, I think that I was really hopeful for them coming in before the Simmons injury. I really like that kid, Sergio Rodriguez from Spain. He had been playing a few years. He's a really good point guard, but he's not a starting guard. He's a bench kind of guy. And like Ben says, I totally agree. I think they're going to take every call on Nerlens Noel this year because he is a free agent. So this coming summer, he's a restricted free agent. So basically, if you don't trade him right now, you're not going to get any value for him when he hits the market with those kind of contracts they're offering. I'm eager to see just the development wise. You know, Saric, he's a kid who played Croatia, really really athletic kid who has a lot of talent. You know, Okafor and Embiid, and really, you know, I just don't expect them to win a lot of games. But I do want to see it. They're going to be fun to watch, just more so for their developmental side, just to kind of see where they go. It's kind of nice to see Brett Brown finally have a decent squad to work with outside of them intentionally just tanking every single year the last 4 years. So, I kind of expect that them and Brooklyn should be the two worst teams in the East this coming year.
So one of my favorite big men plays on the next team, and that's the Toronto Raptors. Jonas Valanciunas, yes. I thought was just a stud. 13 points a game, 9 rebounds a game. He is about the one and only thing that I can root for on Toronto. Not a DeMar DeRozan guy. I'm definitely not a Kyle Lowry guy.
Not even a skinny Kyle Lowry guy?
Not even a skinny Kyle Lowry guy. I feel like Toronto is going to be good again because they have those two. They have those two scorers in play. I'm not a Drake guy, so I'm just out all the way around on Toronto. But Ben, what are you thinking for Toronto? How do you feel about them this year?
I think they'll be the second best team in the Atlantic behind Boston. Bruno Caboclo, is he finally only 2 years away? Right, because he was 2 years away from being 2 years away. What, 2 years ago? So now he's only 2 years away. So I think, you know, his development has been nice, but Damari Carroll, really good player there, underrated player in my opinion. Corey Joseph, everybody here knows Corey Joseph, former Spurs backup guy. He's a really solid backup. Patrick Patterson, nice player for them. They got Jakob Poeltl from Utah in the draft this year. He's a really solid seven-footer. He's going to be a defensive guy for them, hopefully to replace Bismack Biyombo, who left for the Orlando Magic. Terrence Ross, kind of your high-flyer guy. I feel like Pascal Siakam is that's not the guy I thought it was, but I mean, I don't know if he'll stick to the team, but 6'10", I mean, they're going to have plenty of size. They have Jared Utah from Iowa. He was fun to watch. He's another 6'10 forward. He's more versatile than just being a forward, though. He can kind of play three or four positions. They got Jared Sullinger from the Celtics, and from what I've heard, Jared Sullinger has actually lost a lot of weight, so he might be able to actually move around this year. But yeah, they mean they'll go under the radar like they do every year. They'll be second in the Atlantic, probably third or fourth in the East, and everyone will be like, oh, Toronto Raptors, maybe it's their year. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Is Drake going to drop an album about it? We'll see.
Paul, what do you think?
They're actually supposed to finish third in the East, 50.5 wins. You know, I'm not going to go through the whole roster. Like Ben did a good job. Just kind of the same team. I just feel they're going to lose a little bit more games. They won 56 last year because two important pieces I felt off their bench were Biyombo, who Ben mentioned, and also Luis Scola. I think those guys defensive. Well, not Scola. Scola kind of filled in a role offensively. You know, he would sub in there. I am excited to see if DeMar Carroll can build some chemistry with DeRozan and Lowry for an entire season. He got injured very early last year, came back late in the playoffs. I never felt he was 100%. But, you know, it wouldn't, like Ben said, it's not going to shock me if they're a top four team in the East, probably losing the second round. That's kind of where I see them.
To go to Paul's point, I think they lose more games. I thought they had a huge bump when Scola left. I was very optimistic about that. Then they lost Biyombo. And I think Biyombo overplayed. You know, I don't think he's going to be that good at just a contract year. You know, he was more energized. But, you know, practically this is really the same team, but a little bit worse. How else can they really improve? You know, there's nothing that I can see DeMar DeRozan do that'll really help the team, you know, as far as improvement. Same with Kyle Lowry. Corey Joseph's a really good backup point guard. But, you know, how can he polish his game up more to really improve them? I just see them dropping down probably to the point where, you know, fourth seed, fifth seed, where they and I just think, you know, I don't really think anybody cares about the Raptors. You know, I don't. So yeah. It's Canada.
Well, let's get out of Canada and get down to Chicago. So we switch over to the Central Division. Chicago's a brand new team. Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, huge story. Robin Lopez is there, of course, to join Jimmy Butler, who's still outstanding. Guys, what do you think of Chicago? We'll start with Jose again.
I think this is going to be a very entertaining team just because Rondo's on there and Dwayne Wade. This is going to be a really good storyline. Other than that, this team, you know, Rondo, Wade, Butler, they have Taj Gibson, they have Robin Lopez. Really, if they start those four, those five, they have Rondo who can't shoot, Wade who's not really a consistent shooter, Butler who's not a consistent shooter, Lopez who can't shoot. This is going to probably be the only team in the NBA that I think if you wanted to rest your guys, you could play a 2-3 zone against. Or at least, you know, dare them to shoot and, you know, basically bring everybody in. I don't see them being better than us, you know, maybe a 6th, 7th, or 8th seed. Just because, you know, these guys are not going to be able to shoot. They're going to have a hard time moving the ball. It's just going to be horrible. So I don't like this team. I think this was one of those things where they got Rondo because Rondo was available. Wade because it's Dwayne Wade and that's his hometown. Butler because he was the better option over Derrick Rose. Robin Lopez because I think he overperformed in New York. But again, in New York, they had different circumstances. You played Melo at the four. That stretches the defense out. He's not going to have that. So I just think it's going to be a horrible time in Chicago. Just horrible.
Ben, what do you think?
Wow, that is aggressive, Jose. That is just, I don't know about a horrible time. I think they'll still make the playoffs. I mean, also, let's not forget, they just traded for Michael Carter-Williams. So if you want to talk about non-shooters, there's another one. Okay, you got a 6'6 guard who can't shoot. So this team is constructed very oddly. No idea what's going on. I don't know what Chicago's trying to do. But I think they really need to see Mirotić, Portis, and McDermott get some good minutes, or I don't think they're going to be very good. I'm not saying they should start, but they should have solid minutes off the bench, and I think they can be a pretty decent team. And while Dwayne Wade isn't really a shooter, he is a consistent mid-range guy, and he can get to the line into the cup. So that helps. Rajon Rondo can obviously get to the cup. He's not really going to be looking for his own shot, which is perfect, because then you can get Jimmy Butler his shots, and you can get McBuckets his shots. And Taj Gibson is going to continue to be a hustle, offensive putback kind of guy, so that's fine. And then I think the question marks are really going to come from their bench. Is Denzel Valentine going to be a good backup this year? Is he going to even really get that much time since there are so many guards on this team? So I think those are some things to look for. But I see the Bulls as like a 5 or 6 seed.
I'm kind of with Jose. I'm laughing at this roster, basically. You know, Vegas has them as the 10th to finish 10th in the East at 38.5 wins. I think they're going to be under that. They're just hilarious because they brought in Fred Hoiberg, the coach, to run a spread out, you know, warrior style running gun type of system. When, like you guys mentioned, they have no shooters on this team. They just traded for Michael Carter Williams yesterday, which is, like Ben said, is not a shooter as well. So the paint's going to be clogged. And then when your only shooters are like Mirotić, Dougie McBuckets, some of those guys, and they don't play any defense. So, like, when you do have your good shooters on there, you can't play any defense. I just think, you know, and then these are all personalities who have, you know, very demonstrative type of styles. Rondo has had issues with coaches. Wade has never been outspoken with it, but you can tell, you know, he might be a guy who could also have some issues. And then, of course, you got, you know, Butler wasn't happy last year sharing some of the load with Derrick Rose. So I just feel like Fred Hoiberg is kind of still a young coach, so I really feel like a lot of that's also going to be a lot of clash in the locker room where the players – aren't going to get along. I think they're just going to be hilarious, you know, just to watch. Like Jose said, teams are going to be able to actually, like, just take nights off playing 2-3 defenses against these guys because you don't have to guard any of their shooters. It's going to be hilarious just to, you know, and like, you know, even though they a lot of them are good mid-range shooters, Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade. But the thing is, it's not like the Spurs where, like, you use LaMarcus and Powell's mid-range. It's because the teams are just going to clog the paint. They're going to, like, back off, like, 5 feet off their guys. I mean, Rondo, I mean, no point guard's even going to get close to him when he doesn't have the ball. So I really think they're going to go under. I could see them maybe making an inside just because things are not on the right way. So I don't have them making the playoffs.
Well, now that you mentioned it, do you think they're going to probably trade one of the big three? Obviously not Butler, but Rondo or Wade?
You know, I had this weird conspiracy theory when Wade signed with the Chicago. Obviously, there's no truth to it, but I was thinking, like, you know, this situation happens where it doesn't happen, nobody's happy, and Cleveland ends up getting a package to where he ends up playing with LeBron this season. By February. It's just a conspiracy kind of theory that I have, but, you know, just because, like Ben said, like, when you see the way that they made these moves this past summer, it's like, what are you guys doing? Like, this is... And your system doesn't even apply to this. So I could definitely see, Jose, a trade happening before February with any of these guys. Even Butler at draft night, his name was on the table. So, you know,
or, who knows? Or they get rid of Hoiberg even.
Yeah, that's true too. Yep.
You know? If they really want to keep their guys, maybe they say, okay, well, we need to get rid of Hoiberg because he's not going to run a system conducive to scoring buckets with this team that we poorly constructed.
Oh, but, I mean, what coach would want that situation? I mean, even if they offered me $1 million, you know, I probably would. But now that Paul said it, maybe Kevin Love, you never know. Put LeBron at the four, wow. Now you got a really great team out there. Great, ooh. Fantastic.
Well, speaking about that, how about Cleveland? Pretty much the same team as last year, but what was different about this time last year for Cleveland is they didn't have Channing Frye on the roster. With Channing Frye there going in to start the year, they start to look really. I mean, of course, they won the title, but look really deep again. They look scary good again. How about the Cleveland Cavaliers in that division, Jose?
In the division, I mean, obviously they're the NBA champion, so they can do no wrong right now. I like the way that they kept, you know, this team together. The big parts, obviously, they let Dellavedova go, but I mean, they kept really the core that helped them. Against the Warriors, the only thing that I'm fearing is, even as they look deep, I mean, Kevin Love still looked extremely weak in the finals.
Right.
LeBron still had to carry the huge load on the offensive end. He had to play the four. They really didn't upgrade to where the burden could be kept off LeBron. You know, at his age, how long can he really last the season, especially if he wins the championship? You saw that with the Spurs when they were NBA champions. you know, they kind of went a little bit harder during the regular season. A lot of injuries piled up. You know, they didn't have that same mentality as, you know, fighting for the championship. It's two different feelings when you're defending it. So, I mean, for the division, I like it for overall. I think there's still some weaknesses out there that teams may exploit. So maybe, as Paul said, you know, there could be a package for Cleveland out there somewhere, maybe in Chicago.
Ben, what do you think?
Because this is a very nice roster. I mean, when you go out and you spend that much money above the luxury tax, you better have a lineup that looks like this, honestly. So, I mean, you can't really blame them for anything here. If anything, you might have a shortage of decent backup guards. But if they try the Kay Felder experiment, that could be really fun. He's a bouncy, quick 5'9 guard out of Oakland. I enjoyed watching him play college ball. I think he could be really fun to watch and with the second unit. But they also have Markell Brown. Underrated pickup, Mike Dunleavy. I will always and forever love Mike Dunleavy irrationally. So, I mean, like everyone's been saying, they're gonna be tops in the East. They're going to be tops in this division. You know, road to the finals goes through them.
Paul, what's the over-under on Cleveland this year?
They're expected to finish number one, like Ben said, 56.5 wins, so 4 above Boston. So like I said earlier, Boston could challenge them if they're really aggressive and Cleveland kind of tones it down. I feel like Cleveland, there's two routes they go. One is you're going to have MVP LeBron, where, you know, he really sees that with the Warriors getting Durant and Curry, they're kind of out of the running for the MVP. There's really just Kawhi in the West. And I'm forgetting somebody else. Oh, Russell Westbrook. So I think if LeBron sees that there's an MVP still there for him, I think that he could be kind of aggressive and, you know, put up monster numbers, get them to maybe over 60 wins this year. However, the other route I see is maybe the coasting method, where they're going to kind of just try to preserve their health, make sure they're healthy for late for May and June. So maybe they have Kyrie be their number one guy. LeBron's more facilitator throughout the year, like Ben said, they lost some of their depth, Deli, Timofey Mozgov, just for those regular season kind of minutes. But they did fill them with Birdman, Chris Anderson, like Ben said, Kay Felder. So I think that what's good for them is, as long as they're healthy in June and May, they still have their core, you know, top eight guys that they're going to play against, you know, whatever West team that they're supposed to face. So as long as they can keep those guys healthy and fresh by the time the playoffs come, they should be in an okay position to, you know, try to repeat.
So up in Detroit, they're building something really nice around Stan Van Gundy. Andre Drummond is amazing, still can't shoot a free throw. Luckily, he's got his backup, Aaron Baines, who just kills it from the stripe, right, Jose? Tell me about Aaron Baines and your Detroit Pistons.
This is where all my basketball Bays go and, you know, break my heart. Aaron Baines. what's his name? Boban. I even forgot Boban. His name. Maybe purposely, I try to forget him. You know, I like this team. You know, you mentioned Drummond is a beast. Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, Caldwell Pope, Ish Smith. I think they have a really solid starters there. They have Ray McCallum, which, you know, that helps them out with that leadership or whatever, you know, in the backup, sure, right, Ryan?
It does.
Cousin of Ryan.
You know, I really like the Aaron Baines and Boban lineup because they really protect Drummond in really whatever situation. Baines can bang, you know, the big bang with big guys. He can rebound even though he'll foul out, you know, right away. Boban, you know, he's really one of those slow guys, but you know, if they pair those two up, you know, Baines and Boban, I think they can really do something special because, you know, Boban still has that little sweet touch whenever he shoots because he could look over everybody, look over a mountain, really. So I'm liking this team. I have them, you know, battling for home court. I'm still deciding on the fourth or fifth seed, but I think they're going to be really good and really improve from last year.
Paul, what are your thoughts?
Vegas has them to win, to be fourth in the East, 44.5 wins. I really like this team as well. I don't like the Reggie Jackson injury that just happened recently, so he's going to miss a few weeks to start the year. So I think that throws them off. Ish Smith is your starting point guard. And, you know, Ben and Jose did a good job of breaking down their roster. I just think that what they really have is a positional versatility on defense. A lot of their guys are, you know, 6'5 to like 6'9 range, so they can basically throw so many different lineups out there with some shooting, with some posting ability. You know, they can move the ball. They run a good system, like when Stan was in Orlando when he had Dwight in his early prime. So, you know, I definitely have them in the playoff picture. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how far they can get when Reggie comes back to guide them. But right now, you know, they're a really good, solid team. I think defense will definitely be one of their mainstays. And then just, you know, spreading it out and being versatile against opponents.
We'll finally be back to Detroit basketball. Like everyone's been saying, their bigs are fantastic. They have a lot of them. I think what we might see with Reggie Jackson out, we might actually see Kentavious Caldwell-Pope take over as a combo guard and keep Ish Smith on the bench, and then you get Stanley Johnson kind of playing a 2 and 3. I think there's potential for that kind of lineup, and then you have Tobias Harris, Andre Drummond, and you kind of experiment in that fourth spot, maybe John Luer, or even let the rookie Henry Ellenson get a run. I watched him in summer league. He's very smooth. He's fluid. His shot wasn't quite there. It just wasn't hitting, but it looks good. So I think if he can get some confidence during the season, he can be a really good piece for them, really good asset. And that's a guy who can play 4 or 5, or, you know, depending on the lineup, even maybe 3. So I think they have a really nice lineup here. Like Paul was saying, they have a lot of defensive versatility. Harris for 3 different guys. Stanley Johnson can do the same thing. Henry Ellenson can do the same thing. Michael Beneje, if he gets some minutes, he can guard 2 or 3 positions. So I really like this team. I'm going to agree with the over-under here. I'm going to say they go 4th in the East.
So Indiana looks totally different. There's no more Frank Vogel. George Hill. Jeff Teague's there now. Al Jefferson's there now. I mean, it just looks like a totally different team than what we're used to there with Indiana. Paul George is back to playing a small forward spot this year, where last year he had that power forward role. The team did really well, 23 points a game, 7 rebounds a game. Monty Ellis is back, though. I don't know what to make of this team, especially when you're transitioning to Nate McMillan's system. He's already sort of there, already kind of in that system, but you know he's going to focus a little bit differently. I don't know. There's so many ups and downs with how I'm feeling about Indiana this year. I could see them being, you know, top 4 team in the East. I could see them being out of the playoffs. Jose, what are your thoughts on Indiana?
Well, I think since you said maybe out of the East in the playoffs, I think they're going to be the second best team in the East. Like you said, they have Jeff Teague, Ellis, George, Thaddeus Young, Miles Turner, who really, I mean, he was a beast last season. Aaron Brooks, they have Ronnie Stuckey still. Al Jefferson. You know, it's going to be dependent on the rotations, because really those starters, those 5 guys that were first mentioned, they want a lot of minutes. They are worthy of those minutes. But at the same time, you just signed Al Jefferson, who can really, if he's on, he could just dominate a game, especially if he's healthy. I hope that he starts at the 4. I would bring Thaddeus Young, because he's so versatile off the bench, sort of like that Boris Diaw role, because he could play the 3, the 4. Maybe if you want to put him at the 5, you know, depending on the situation. But I have them as the second best team out in the East, but it all depends on really the rotations that they're gonna have for them.
Ben, what do you think about Indiana?
Oh, this is this is a really weird team. Like you have really good talent in Monte Ellis and Paul George and Al Jefferson and even Jeff Teague, and Miles Turner was great last year. Thaddeus Young's a great guy to have. But under a new coach, it's going to be a totally different system, and like these guys are just weird. I don't know how they fit. You have LaVoy Allen. You have Aaron Brooks will obviously be the backup point guard. CJ Miles can play backup 2 or 3. I really like Georges Niang out of Iowa State. He was one of my favorite players to watch in college. I mean, Kevin Serafin, I have no idea what you do with Kevin Serafin. Is Rodney Stuckey the third guard, the third or fourth guard off the bench? I don't know what to think of this team. Because, like like we've said, they could either be like a top four team or they could be a bottom five team in the conference. So I have no idea. I'm going to say they're going to be the 10th best team in the conference.
Paul, what do you think?
Well, you guys are actually right there. Vegas has them to finish with just like Detroit, either fourth or fifth, 40 points. So,
what do I know?
You know, it's very hard to read this team. I feel like they're built for the modern NBA. Defensively, you know, they have a lot of guys who with a lot of length, a lot of size, versatility, like kind of like Detroit, where they can switch a lot of different options. They don't have a great interior post presence. I know Al Jefferson's there, but he's supposed to only come off the bench and kind of be like their sixth man, where they run the offense through him with the second unit. And then I just feel like it's shooting that they're missing. You know, you have Monte Ellis starting. He's definitely not an outside shooter. Teague is, you know, very, very inconsistent with his jumper. And then outside of Paul George, there's not a lot of, you know, a lot of shooting on that on those lineups. So I feel like defenders will back off of this team. You know, more good mid-range shooting. But I just think that if Nate can get his system filled in, the guys buy in, you know, they should be able to win, you know, 44 and a half games. They have the talent to be there to do that, especially in the Eastern Conference. Now, if they're in the West, then I could definitely see them slipping from the playoff picture. But since they're in the East, I think that they'll be manageable, you know, maybe finish it. I know we'll give our positions later, but yeah, I definitely have them in the top five this year.
So Milwaukee's one of these teams that people could be really high on or just say, hey, they're not there yet. You know, this is another one where I'm not so sure if they can grow significantly from last year's win total, 33 wins last year. I'm not sure that they can do that. You know, what do you do with, you know, Chris Middleton? You know, I can't even say his name. But Antetokounmpo, how about that? How about that for a try?
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Okay, so you speak for me. He, as soon as he moved over to point guard, triple-double threat, fantastic player. Dellavedova's there. I like Miles Plumlee. I'm one of these guys who I like all of the Plumlees. Other than that, where are we going here with Milwaukee? I frankly don't know much about that team. It's hard for me to even rate them, but I just can't believe that they're going to be much improved from 35 wins. Jose, what do you think?
You know, you're going to call me crazy. I actually had this team pre-trade to be maybe second or third out in the East because I love the fact that they had Michael Carter-Williams, right? They had Antetokounmpo or whatever. That was my first try ever. Parker, Thon Maker, and Greg Monroe, they're all over. They're all basically power forwards, right? I was thinking if all these guys start, you know, that's going to be such a huge quick team in some positions where I think they would have dominated the East in some points with the exception of Cleveland. But, you know, now that they traded, you know, one of their top pieces, I just don't like this team. I think the Greek Freak is going to, you know, he's going to have an MVP-like season, probably average a triple-double, you know, especially if he's the point guard there. I think Dellavedova adds nothing. I think he was just, you know, a whatever signing just to get some attention. But I like the young pieces, Thon Maker, Jabari Parker, all those. I think they're gonna be one of those fast, quick, exciting teams. But in the end, they're really not gonna have that leadership. They're not gonna have that advantage where they had if they would have started those five really tall guys. So I just don't like this team right now. But I think they'll be exciting.
Jose, do you think that Greg Monroe makes it the whole season? Because they did just get Thon Maker, as you said.
I think he would have made it if just because of the versatility that they had with Carter Williams, but. You know, now, you know, really, I think more pressure is going to be on Monroe to be that inside presence, and I don't know if he'll last the season because of...
Paul,
what does
Vegas say, Paul?
What do they got?
Okay, so Vegas has them 12th in the East, which is only with one, okay. Well, basically one win improvement. So this is 34 and a half wins. That's their over-under. Like you guys, I really liked this team before Chris Middleton got injured. I felt like he was like their one shooter who was kind of deadly, where teams have to respect him. And then they basically filled his spot with the great Michael Super Cool Beasley, and who's the other guy that just brought it? Tony Snell from Chicago. He's a decent shooter, you know, a good lockdown defender. Kind of like Indiana, I feel like this team defensively, they're going to be okay, just not at the rim. You know, they have Monroe's not a great defender, Henson, Plumlee, none of these guys.
I think Thon Maker's going to be too young to get any quality minutes just yet.
He's got to put on a lot more weight, too.
Yeah, he won't be able to bang down there with the big guys. So I think at the rim is where they're going to really struggle defensively. But on the outside, you know, they have so much Jabari, Giannis Antetokounmpo. You got Delly, he's a steady guard off the bench. But I just feel like their talent-wise, their makeup of their team doesn't make a lot of sense right now. It wouldn't surprise me, though. Let's say that they're really struggling. They're like one of the top five worst teams in the East. Come like January, I think they will take calls on Monroe and try to get him traded because he could opt out of his deal this coming summer and become a free agent, which I think that's probably going to happen, considering his name was in trade rumors this past summer as well. So yeah. I think that's a team to watch in the trade market, just to kind of see what they can get for their pieces. Just because I think that this is almost a lost season coming in just because of that Middleton injury that really kills him.
And like you said with Monroe, the league has gotten into this mode where it's, a guy can opt out of his contract next year. We need to get rid of him before he opts out and we lose him for nothing. So, I mean, Greg Monroe is definitely going to be a name you hear tossed around a lot at the trade deadline, especially because he doesn't really fit in with what the Bucks are doing, and that's becoming really long, lean, and super versatile. I think they're going to be a bottom five team in the East, but they could be interesting to watch because Antetokounmpo is going to get time at the point guard position. He's going to play probably every position at some point. I really like rookie Malcolm Brogdon. He's a very good guard. He's a very good defender. He's a solid mid-range shooter. We'll probably have to work on his three-point shooting a bit. They went out and got Delly and Jason Terry for veteran purposes, I assume. Rashawn Vaughn could still end up getting... they went out and got Mirza Teletovic, who I like. I think he's a solid guy. He's a good shooter. Didn't get a lot of attention because he was with the Nets. Jabari Parker is going to be great. Like everyone said, the Chris Middleton injury is pretty unfortunate. I think we were all excited about watching him play. Thon Maker's got to put on a bunch of weight if he wants to play. He's 7'1" and he weighs 216. I mean, he has to get up to at least 230, 240 if he wants to bang around in the post. And even if he doesn't, he's got to put on the weight so he can get by guys, finish through contact, things like that. So I just think this is a bottom five team, and it's a lot of it's because of that Middleton injury.
Wow, 218. Oh, 216, you said? I'm 2 pounds heavier than him. Wow. There you go. The more you know.
So going down south to Atlanta, this is a team that you lose Jeff Teague. And I'm not sure that I like the roster better, but T goes away, and I think you get a really nice piece, even though he doesn't play point guard, and Dwight Howard joining. And then I look up and down the roster, and I like everything about this roster. Schroeder's starting is going to be the whole story for the season. Korver took a bit of a decline last year. I'm hoping that he can kind of come back from that in terms of three-point shooting. Dwight Howard is going to get a double-double consistently. Millsap, still Millsap, doing fantastic. I love Tim Hardaway Jr. I actually saw him play in the D-League a little bit last year. I thought he was amazing there. I think he's going to be a good NBA player. He just has to develop some consistency. You have Jarrett Jack. You have Chris Humphries. You have some veteran leadership there. I really like Atlanta. Now, I don't like Atlanta to compete for championships in the East, but I like them to be right there in the middle of things, 4, 5, or 6. I don't know. What do you think of Atlanta, Paul?
Yeah, you're right, Ryan. Vegas has them as right there at the 60 with 43.5 wins. So I really like I like to make with their team. For me, it comes down to one player, Dwight Howard. Does he accept his role? I think that if Bud can kind of just convince him, defensively become like that Tim Duncan from the 2012 to like 2014 Spurs teams, and then offensively kind of do what Thiago did, just set picks and roll to the rim. We're going to get you alley-oops, we're going to get you dunk attempts, we're going to get you the foul line, but just kind of don't think that you're a post-up offensive player where you need to cut one in Houston. That's why him and James Harden clashed so much. That's why the coaching staff and him just couldn't get along, because he kept thinking he was an offensive option. But if he just sets picks and rolls to the rim, Schroeder's going to find him. You got Jarrett Jack on the bench. You got that kid Malcolm Delaney from the EuroLeague, who's a really good point guard as well. I think that they're going to put a lot more emphasis on the responsibility of Kent Bazemore and getting him to grow. I think a trade name if things don't shake out for Atlanta is Paul Millsap. You know, there was rumbles of his name this past summer when they were trying to get when Al Horford was going to Boston. Millsap's name came up, and then, you know, like you guys said, they have a lot of young guys, like DeAndre Bembry, and the other kid from, I think it was from Baylor, Torian Prince. So I think that they have a lot of talent, a lot of young kids. You know, Bud's going to do great just with the kind of system that he employs, where everybody gets their touches, everybody gets to have an emphasis in the offense. And then they, defensively, they have a really good scheme. And I think defensively, you know, they were number two, I think, to San Antonio last year. They could not be that great still, but they're going to definitely be like in the top 10 just because they have Dwight there. If he, like I said, if he accepts his role and puts forth the effort.
I'm going to go with the other side of the equation, sort of the opposite of what Paul was saying about Howard's role. I think this is going to be the closest team that he can run that old Orlando Magic type of offense, where because of Millsap being able to shoot the three, he could play that Rashard Lewis type of offense. We can spot up and he can, you know, get those up because of Schroeder's, you know, really he's really quick. So, I mean, teams are going to have to make a decision. I think Dwight can still roll to the basket like he did. And, I mean, you enter Thiago Splitter. If Splitter backs up Dwight, I mean, you could sort of still play that same type of offense. I think it'll work out for him. Unless he calls Olajuwon back up and learns those nifty moves in the paint to post up, I don't think he should be a post up option, like Paul said. You know, really at this point of his career, he, you know, to Paul's point, he has to be, he has to let the game come to him, how, you know, how it's playing out. If he has to be a guy just to set up, just to set screens for other guys off the ball screens, and maybe he gets a dunk here and there. You know, it's really come to that because really no other team would have given him that role anyway. So it's all about adjustment for Dwight Howard. But I think they'll go as far as Dwight takes him, because if he's going to be a prima donna about it and have problems with his touches, the team really can't really depend on guys like Splitter to stay healthy for that. So it really is all going to be on Dwight.
I have this team finishing sixth in the East. And I don't think Dwight Howard's going to be an issue. There was no team that was nearly as dysfunctional as the Houston Rockets were last year. They fired Kevin McHale way too early in the season, undeservedly so. If he, for whatever reason, he lost that locker room, which made no sense to me because they did so well the year before. So I think a lot of it was James Harden kind of poisoning the locker room. You know, a lot of people were going to make it out to be Dwight's fault. Whatever, that's fine. He's going to move on. I think he's going to be fine. I've been watching him in the preseason a little bit. He's worked on his mid-range game a little bit. He has a nice little bank shot from like 12, 15 feet. So I think he's going to be an underrated offensive player this year. But like you guys were saying, if you get him in the pick and roll, get him his lobs, he'll be just fine. And you know, you can't say don't be a post player and then say you want to play inside out to Paul Mills, you know, with Dwight and Paul Millsap. He has to post and be a threat in the post in order to make that happen and have that 09 magic. So, you know, I think Dwight Howard is going to be a key piece, but I also think Kyle Korver shooting better this year is going to be key. And I think that might come because after he had that really hot 14-15 season where he was just shooting unreal, broke Dana Barris's record for most, you know, most games with a three. And I think the next year everybody just kind of collapsed on him and made sure they had a guy spying on him at all times. So I think he's going to get open up again. He's going to open up again this year. He's going to be fine. Dennis Schroeder running the point is what everybody's been wanting in Atlanta for years. That's going to be fine. We're going to unleash the Baze God, finally. Been waiting for this forever. If you like guys with lots of hair in a fro formation, DeAndre Bembry is your boy. And Tim Hardaway, like I think Paul said, did play in the D-League a bit, should be getting some reps here. Chris Humphreys, underrated forward, by the way, has improved his shot as well. And Paul Millsap's going to be great. He's going to be Paul Millsap. Torian Prince could be an underrated rebounder for these guys. And they still have Mike Muscala, who goes under the radar every year, but still minutes from time to time. So I think this team will be fine. They're going to be sixth in the East.
Charlotte looks a bit different. Now, Kemba Walker's still there, still a fantastic player, although he gets really no love. Last year I thought he had a breakout year, but people still don't talk about him as one of the top, I don't know, five point guards in the league. Nick Batum, 15 points a game, just playing lights out for his, you know, for what he can do. I really like him defensively. Charlotte, for me, takes a big step back, and it's because of this, because they have Roy Hibbert on their team.
Yes.
He doesn't match anything that they do. He got a job because he's 7'10" or however tall this guy is.
7'2".
Yeah, 7'2". Super tall, slow. I don't even know if he is 50% of what he was in Indiana. I guess we're going to find out. I do like the fact that Bellinelli's over there. I think that he works out really well because of the spacing on that team. But I think that Hibbert there starting, if he makes it the full year, that's going to be the end of Charlotte and what they tried to build last year, or tried to build upon what they did last year. Jose, what do you think of Charlotte?
Oh, like you said, the fact that they got Roy Hibbert, I am not a Roy Hibbert fan at all. I think he's, you know, I mean, you look at him run, it hurts your feet just because the guy is, he's flat footed. He just, I mean, he can't post up. He can't really shoot. He's just there. He's just that tall guy. You know, he makes Roshan Nesterovich look like, you know, Jordan out there. You know, have Kemba Walker, Batum, a long, if he plays the two, he's going to be a long shooting guard. Michael, Kid Gilchrist. He's healthy, right? He's the one that always gets hurt, but he's healthy right now. Marvin Williams, you know, again, that center position is going to be horrible. I like Spencer Haas. You know, he can really stretch that defense out. Bellinelli is going to be who's the one that said it? Ryan, you said it, right? That Bellinelli was a solid pickup. He can play that one position, you know, depending on, you know, doesn't even matter with matchups. If he has a matchup, you know, get the defense all ruffled out there. So, I mean, I like this team with the exception of Hibbert. The one thing they should be praying for, and it's not really the best thing, is if he just doesn't want to play anymore, he forgets that he's a basketball player. You know, maybe he has a boo-boo and doesn't want to go out on the court. Something like that. You know, that center position is just going to kill them.
Put a Band-Aid on it. Oh, man.
How are you feeling about your
off? Not good, man. Not good. This is going to be a bottom five team after they had a really solid year last year. I mean, first of all, you got a guy named Andrew Andrews on the roster right now. You got to fix that. You only get one Andrew, okay? You don't get double names. It's not how this works, right? Nicholas Batum is going to be great. Perry Ellis is going to look like a five-year vet, even though he was only a five-year vet at Kansas. Although, you know,
right,
some people say he was old enough to play with Wilt Chamberlain. It looks like it. Although he did pair with the men's fragrance, Perry Ellis. So he is a smart businessman. I'll give him that. Like everyone's been saying, Roy Hibbert is going to be slow. It's not going to be fun to watch on offense. He cannot get up and down the court. Although he should provide good defense with his principle of verticality. And Frank Kaminsky, as long as he improves, he'll be fun to watch. He's got to improve his shot a little bit. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist has improved his shot a lot. He used to have a completely broken shot, and now the man looks smooth when he shoots the ball. Jeremy Lamb's going to be solid. Brian Roberts, underrated backup. Ramon Sessions is a good player. Rashid Suleiman out of Duke/Maryland, five-year player, was a graduate transfer at Maryland last year. He can be a really good defensive guard if the need should ever arise for him to get decent minutes. Marvin Williams actually played well last year. Cody Zeller's solid. I mean, they have five guys who are 7 feet or taller on this team right now, with Zeller, Mike Toby, Kaminsky, Hibbert, and Hawes. So, I mean, they could play some really massive lineups, but it would not be good if they did so.
Mm-hmm. Paul?
Vegas has them finishing, you know, still in the playoff picture, seventh with 42.5 wins. You know, they won 48 last year. I kind of see that, about a 6-loss difference in wins. You know, their coach is really good. Steve Clifford, he really gets the guys to buy in. He's a defensive-minded coach first. Always, you know, has very fundamental principles. Now, before I know everybody's hating on Roy Hibbert. He's not going to start. He's it's supposed to still be Cody Zeller. Should still be their starting center, just like last year, with Marvin Williams at the four. You know, Batum. I think that with Bellinelli, you kind of fill in a little bit of the point supply that they lost to Jeremy Lin. He was a really good backup last year for them, and he was consistent. Mm-hmm. Where the Bell can kind of do off the off the bench. I think the guy they will miss, though, is Al Jefferson. He was kind of their sixth man where they ran a lot of the offense through him in the post, especially in the playoffs. He was one of their go-to guys down the stretch when nobody else could get a bucket. And that's where you're going to see the Roy Hibbert thing, where like, you don't want Roy Hibbert being your guy who's filling in Al Jefferson's minutes. But overall, you know, I still see them right there in the bubble, like 7-8 seed, maybe even 6 at their best, just because they're, like I said, they're coaching by Steve Clifford and just their system that they're going to have in place. And they're not a dumb team. They don't turn it over on themselves. They pretty much execute really well. They don't give the opponent opportunities to score on them or do these kind of things against them.
The Miami Heat had the worst offseason in the East, in my opinion. But you lose Dwayne Wade. Goes back home, goes to play in Chicago. And then, of course, Chris Bosh with just horrible health situation with the blood clots. You know, even though he's still under contract, it's, you know, his career's basically over.
Very ugly situation.
Yeah, yeah, horrible deal. It really wrecks what I had projected for Miami. I thought Miami would be, you know, 4, 5, or 6 with Bosch in the lineup. Now I don't really know what they are. Dragic is an all-star capable point guard. Josh Richardson could step up with Dwayne Wade not there, but he's hurt to start the year. You have Hassan Whiteside, who could just be totally dominant, and in a lot of cases already is, but he's got to do that consistently the whole year. Justice Winslow is one of those players that I really, really like, kind of like Kawhi Leonard. Kind of like Damari Carroll, Jay Crowder, all of those kind of guys I really like. I hate that you got Josh McBob as a starter on this team.
Ugh.
He's a 3-point-a-game guy, and he's starting on this team. Deion Waiters
is
over there.
He's the worst.
There are some nice pieces for Miami, but they're missing like one or two very significant pieces to be competitive out in the East. I don't have a good feel for this team, but the feel that I do have is really, really negative. I don't know, Jose, how do you feel about Miami?
Oh, I hate this team, but I thought Derek Williams would have been starting at the 4, not McBob. But, you know, I mean, they're Dragic, you know, you mentioned Tyler Johnson, right? Is he starting at the 2? Well, who knows?
Could be.
Justice Winslow, Derek Williams, Whiteside. They have a really decent starters, but then you go and then it just gets depressing. You know, Beno Udrih is still there. Udonis Haslem is still there. You know, just guys that, I mean, they wouldn't even get picked in a draft. You know, it'd be those unrestricted free agents. So I think it's just going to go horrible for them. I think they're going to be worse than the Nets. That's what I don't get. I mean, this team is just a random team. I don't know how Dragic, you know, he's a good player when you can run. I don't see this team running, and I see Whiteside as being labeled as overrated just because he's not going to he's going to be really the guy the whole team, the defense is going to be focusing on. So I just see this team as being worse than what the Nets are going to be.
Just like Milwaukee, these guys are supposed to finish with just 34.5 wins, so they're supposed to be one of the top 5 worst teams in the East this coming year. You know, you guys broke it down pretty well, their roster. They were here in San Antonio Friday night. I got to see them. You know, they have a, like Jose said, their starting 5 is, it's kind of got that modern NBA feel to it. You know, a lot of pick and roll, a lot of shooting, spread pick and roll kind of stuff. Derek Williams was starting for them that night, but I think if McRoberts is healthy, he should be starting during the year. But then, like you guys said, the bench just, you know, that's just when the no names come in. You got Luke Babbitt, Tyler Johnson's pretty good. You know, you got a veteran guy, Wayne Ellington, you know, James Johnson. You just have all these guys that they're not top elite talent. They're maybe like third string on most teams. And these are going to be the guys you're counting on for 82 games a night. And that's hoping that they don't get hurt. I think this is a team also where, you know, obviously shutting down Dragic very early or Whiteside, if those guys get any kind of early injuries on them, just making kind of sacrificing the season.
Yeah, this is a very oddly built team now, especially with Chris Bosh out. Some of the guys you have backing up here, Willie Reed is actually a solid guy. I watched him play summer league a few times. He can be a solid player, but like Jose Beno Udrih, like really? Deion Waiters is going to replace Dwayne Wade? Okay. Briante Weber? Okoro White, Hassan Whiteside, obviously going to be good. Justice Winslow, going to be good. Going to be fun to watch, too. Really fun lefty if you're into, you know, watching lefty basketball. Tyler Johnson should be the starting shooting guard with the amount of money they paid to keep him for whatever reason. Couldn't tell you why. They decided to match the Nets' offer of $50 million over 4 years, I believe, which is insane to me considering he was a guy they had sent to the D League a few times and, you know, he was barely coming off the bench at times. Then last year he kind of had a breakout year. So I don't really know what they're doing. Goran Dragic, I think, is going to be upset halfway through the season when he realizes he doesn't have Chris Bosh to throw the ball to. And he's just going to be like, this is not offense. This is not what I was looking forward to. If there's anybody out there who likes Josh McRoberts, please let me know because I need to Twitter punch you in the face. That man is just one of the worst. Josh Richardson should be a very good shooter this year. He was on fire after the All-Star break last year.
Do you guys think that Riley might – I think this team could be the doom of Pat Riley's career there in Miami. I just don't see how he's going to recover. He lost LeBron. After losing LeBron, it was kind of like, well, screw everybody else because he didn't even call Wade. He wants Bosh to retire, so it's kind of like a see ya. I just don't see him surviving this horrible team.
He's lost a lot of a goodwill in that city over this past summer because of all those things you said, not going after Dwayne Wade and not being aggressive enough on the right guys in the summer during free agency.
So, in deference to Ben Bornstein, I just want to say that this next team, I'm just going to defer to him the whole time, but the next team is one of the teams I am the highest on in the East and in all of the NBA. I think that they are going to have a great team this year. I'm really excited to see them play. But, Ben, the floor is yours for the Orlando Magic.
All right. This team is either going to be incredibly awesome or horrifically terrible to watch. I do not know which one yet. I have no idea. They have all the bigs. I have no idea who's starting. I mean, they have Jeff Green, Aaron Gordon, Bismack Biyombo, Nikola Vucevic. They drafted Steven Zimmerman. He's probably not going to play a whole lot of minutes, but that's another big. They got Serge Ibaka in the Victor Oladipo trade. Evan Fournier is your go-to scorer now? Question mark? I don't know. Mario Hezonja is going to play the three or the four sometimes. I mean, I don't know where they get. Jody Meeks is a backup guard on this team. Elfrid Payton still hasn't learned how to shoot beyond the free throw line yet. I'm so confused. I don't know. But, like, there are so many athletic people on this team. It's just I want all the dunks, but I don't know if it's going to happen. And you have two – there are two CJs on this team. We have CJ Watson and CJ Wilcox. This is a crazy team right now. I don't know how to explain this. DJ Augustine is a backup point guard. I mean, this team is, like I said, it seems like they're going to be really good. They're going to be like seventh or eighth seed, or they're just going to be terrible, and you're going to be asking yourself, pulling your hair out the entire time watching them, oh my God, is this why I got league pass? What is wrong with me?
Right. Paul, what do you think?
They're expected to be the latter, a bottom five team in the East. They're supposed to be just ahead of Milwaukee with 37.5 wins, the Magic. You know, you got Vogel there, so I think defensively they're going to be pretty good. You know, you have you brought in Serge Ibaka and Bismack Biyombo, two really good defensive players down in the paint. You know, and then the rest of the roster just doesn't make any sense. Like you kind of just went over. You know, what system do you put in place? You have Vucevic, who's a really good pick and pop kind of player, or a post up player. But then, you know, you still got to share minutes with all those other guys, with Biyombo, with Ibaka. And then you got Aaron Gordon, who's pretty much a four, but they're going to kind of force him to play the three. He doesn't look very natural in it right now. You know, Evan Fournier definitely is their number one kind of like scoring option on the wing. He's going to probably start at the two, and then you have Hezonja backing him up. And then, you know, Payton can't shoot. You know, he's kind of like Rondo. He's kind of just going to get in the paint, get some layups, throw some assists. But he's got good defensive versatility. And then, you know, you got some experience with Watson and Augustine, but, you know, there's so many question marks. Like Ben said, they're built for like a big man 90s team, but there's just all sorts of places. Like when you have Biyombo and Ibaka on the floor, Biyombo can't get out of the paint cause he can't do anything except dunk or do putbacks. You know, Ibaka can kind of spread it out. So it's just a lot of question marks. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe one of these guys that they just signed, ends up being on the trade market in February, if things are working out and they are a bottom five team in the East.
There's talk about Vucevic getting traded as well, I've heard anyway.
Sources.
Hashtag multiple sources.
David Aldridge.
Let me ask Ben, because, you know, this team is, you know, I feel like this is how PETA feels when they see somebody eat a hamburger or a steak. This roster just infuriates.
Oh my god!
I'm looking at this. Yes. I want to ask Ben if this is what the starting five is going to be. Right now, I'm looking at Peyton, Fournier, Gordon, Ibaka, and then Vucevic. That's what it's rumored, right?
I think there's.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it would be. Some people have Aaron Gordon getting switched out for someone else because he's still only a second-year player and they want his energy off the bench. But it's so bizarre.
Like, the only way I like this team is, you know, just like Paul said, Aaron Gordon is not a three. He's a four. If you put in Jeff Green at the three, Gordon at the four, and either Biombo or Ibaka at the five, then you have a really good starting five that could probably compete with anybody in the East.
But you put Vucevic at the five. You have to put him at the five.
Oh, no. Of course you don't have to, Ben.
I guess you don't have to do anything. I guess if you really wanted to, you could start Nick Johnson and Orinze Onuwaku. But hey, who am I to know? What do I know?
Well, anyways, but yeah, I mean, you have to really I don't know. This is why people get choked. You know, it's
trades,
just a horror.
Trades are coming, yo.
But who, I mean, they're going to lowball them because, of course, they can't keep these guys. So why would you give up somebody that's relevant to help out this team that they just had a massive brain fart with? They're going to have to cut losses with at least two big men. It's going to have to be Vucevic, I think. Vucevic and probably...
Well, Biombo, they just signed for long term. So he's staying, unless they trade him. I don't know how long Serge Ibaka's current contract runs for.
This is his only season. This is his last season on contract.
Yeah, they may try and get rid of him too after that December deadline to try and get something back in return. But like you said, they're going to get lowballed. It's going to be rough.
If they want to keep Ibaka, you never know. You know, I mean, just putting this roster together was just, you know, brain fart. Maybe bizarre. Teams ask for Aaron Gordon. You know, that's the only guy who they'll get more for. But I mean, at the same time, you know, I just don't
really,
like it. It's a horrible situation.
Yeah, you really don't want to give up Aaron Gordon if you're the Magic, but that might be your only choice if you're making trades.
I hear the pain in your voice.
There's so much of it. So much.
You crushed me. I thought this was the one we'd have some consistency on. Well, let's go to Washington, where they might rival for the most inconsistent team. John Wall is fantastic. Bradley Beal is good when he's healthy. That's the story of the year. If Bradley Beal can be healthy, Washington can be okay. The guy has
also new coach Scott Brooks.
Yeah, new coach Scott Brooks, who I'm not necessarily too high on. His best days were when he was a backup in Houston. So that's decades old. I don't know. I'm very negative on Scott Brooks as well, even as a coach. I don't think he really brought anything to the table there in Oklahoma. Gortat is – I'm just kind of looking down through the roster. Gortat, I liked him back when he was going into free agency. I thought he could be a nice fit for San Antonio, actually, way back then. I'm not sure what I think of him now. I looked up and down the roster, and they brought in Jan Mahimi, and that's – I do like him. I'm not really happy with Washington. Not that I expected to be anyway, but what do you guys think of Washington? We'll start with Paul as we wrap up the previews for the Eastern Conference teams.
Okay, Washington should be their position to finish at eighth, so right at the last playoff spot with 42.5 wins. But they're kind of on the bubble where, you know, the Knicks could get in that spot, the Bulls, the Magic, somebody like that. Like you said, Ryan, I don't like the way this roster is constructed. I feel like defensively they're going to have a lot of issues with Gortat being their number one guy down in the paint. I know they're starting Markieff Morris, or they were. So then he's an undersized guy. Like the other day I was just playing 2K while I was at the Spurs, and anytime all I do is throw the ball to Aldridge or Gasol against Morris because he's undersized. And then one kid that I really like that I'm really hopeful for this year is you're going to look for his name. He's going to be a lot of highlights. Is Tomas Satoranski. He came from overseas. He was playing over in the EuroLeague last year. So watch out for him. He's going to be a guard off the bench. The starting five is pretty decent. But outside of that, their bench is where I depth is where they're going to get hit the hardest, where they don't have a lot of consistent depth that's reliable. I think Jan Mahinemi is out right now for like 6 to 8 weeks with a foot injury.
So I feel
like off the bench is where they're going to kind of lose a lot of games. And then, you know, Bradley Beal, the guy's never played, I think, more than 70 games in a season, and they just gave him a huge contract extension as well. So, you know, and then also, like you said, Brooks' system. We've only seen him have success with the Thunder with two, you know, top five players, Westbrook and Durant. And Beal really games by the system was built. So I feel like, you know, it's kind of interesting to watch Brooks finally have a team where it's like more of a team concept rather than just two elite talents. So I'm going to see how he does mold on Wall and Beal and see how he puts together a game plan. But for me, you know, I don't have them in the playoff picture, but, you know, if they got in, I wouldn't be the 8th seed.
Very nice. They're near the bottom of the playoffs. There'll be 8, 9, or 10 seed, I think. Now, they're like you said, they have a very oddly constructed team. I can tell you from experience, Andrew Nicol is not your answer to anything except the question, who's that random dude running with the duck feet? Then your answer is Andrew Nicholson, because that's what he does. I've always liked Marcin Gortat. That's my dude. Trey Burke should be okay. He wasn't bad with Utah. He'll be good off the bench. Bradley Beal, obviously very good when he's healthy. That's the key. Kelly Oubre has been getting better. Otto Porter has made significant strides in my eyes. I like him a lot. I think he'll be very good this year. But Jan Mahinemi, like you said, solid dude to have off your bench. Great guy to have off your bench. Sheldon McClellan out of Miami. He's an older player. He's already 24. I think he was a graduate transfer there at one point. Johnny O'Brien out of LSU, another big body. Daniel Ochefu out of Villanova, another big body. Jason Smith, who was with Orlando Magic, that's another big body. I mean, they have plenty of big guys to throw at people on defense if you're trying to protect the rim, but I don't know really anything else after that about this team. It's just a very weird team. Like I said, 8, 9, or 10 in the East.
Okay. I don't even have them in the playoff picture. You know, this team would be good if we're talking about NBA 10 years ago. This is too much of a traditional starting lineup with Wall, Beal, Porter, Morris, and Gortat to really challenge the athletic teams or challenge the high-energy teams. I think against a team like the Spurs where they're going to start really Gasol, Aldridge, and all these other guys, I think against the really good teams like that, Golden State, the Cavs, they're just going to get burned. They really don't have that versatility. They just have, you know, that 2005 type of, you know, Spurs type of, you know, where everybody fits that position. They don't have that much versatility. So I don't like it. I don't think they'll be in the playoffs. I think teams will really exploit that. Gortat is a really good passer for his position. But other than that, he doesn't bring anything, you know, to really have an advantage over the faster NBA.
So we have made it, guys. We made it all the way through the East in an hour and a half. Which, actually, that took a lot longer than I thought it was going to. A lot of great comments about those Eastern Conference teams. So now what I want to do is put you on the spot and have you rank them 1 through 8 for playoff seeding. And then I'll go back through and we'll ask about you know, Eastern Conference champion and so on and so forth. So we'll start with Ben. You have your list. Go 8 through 1.
I got Cavs, Boston.
So go 1 through 8 then.
One through eight. I got Cavs 1, Boston 2, Toronto 3, Detroit 4, and then I believe I said, Hawks 5, and then Wizards 6, not even close. I should have written this down. Indiana 6. We'll go Hornets 7. I'm getting really weird here. And Wizards 8. Boom.
Got it.
See.
Paul.
Nice.
Okay, number 1, the Cavs. Number 2, the Celtics. Number 3, the Raptors. Number 4, the Pacers. Number 5, the Hawks. Number 6, the Pistons. Number 7, the Hornets. And number 8, the New York Knicks.
Ew, boo.
Mine's going to look a little bit different. Cavs, number one, Cavs. Second seed, Pacers. Third seed, Pistons. Fourth seed, Celtics. Fifth seed, Raptors. Sixth seed, Bulls. Seventh seed, Knicks. And the Milwaukee Bucks return to the playoffs at number eight.
Wow. That is definitely different.
I have Cleveland, Boston, Atlanta at three, Toronto at four, Detroit at five, Indy at six, the Knicks at seven, and the Orlando Magic at eight.
Yeah, Ryan, my man.
So at least we have a good mix, going on. So guys, out of those teams, who's playing? The question is, who's going to be playing for the Eastern Conference championship, and then who is going to eventually be the champion? And I'll go first with this. I think that Cleveland's clearly one of the two teams, and then I am going to go out on this limb and say that it's the New York Knicks. And only because I just put down $10 the last time I was in Vegas.
Ryan, what position did you have the Knicks in your playoff seating?
Seven.
Okay, cool.
Oh wow, so they're just gonna, without even home court, just take it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. All the way,
yeah, just plow through everybody.
All the way in, because I think it's, if that, I actually did do some look this up. There's not another team until you go Boston, Cleveland, that can play them the way that they play.
Interesting.
Very generic phrasing. I get it, but look at those rosters throughout the East. I do think that the Knicks, if they can get in, but I think they can run from seven all the way in. We'll go to Paul for maybe some common sense.
Basically, going with the two favorites, Cleveland, Boston, at the end.
With Cleveland winning it?
Oh yeah, sorry. Yes, Cleveland wins that series against Boston.
Just had to be sure. I have the same thing, but I think the series is going to go seven games between Cleveland and Boston, but Cleveland will still win. I think we're going to get one of those classic Cleveland-Boston matchups we saw in the late 2000s that were really fun.
I got Cleveland and Indiana. And just with Thaddeus Young, I think Thaddeus Young at the four, and who really like Miles Turner at the five, I think that's going to be enough to dethrone the Cavaliers, and then they'll be going on to the NBA Finals. So I have the Pacers as the Eastern Conference champs.
Very nice. Okay, guys. Well, thank you so much for doing the East, everyone. That was episode 413 of the Spurs Cast, brought to you by ProjectSpurs.com. We'll be back in a couple of days to do the Western Conference. You can follow me at RyanMC_PS on Twitter. You can follow Jose at JRG1023. Paul, where can they find you on Twitter?
At PaulGarciaPS.
And Ben?
At _BoomScene.
There you go. Guys, follow them and follow, if you're not already following them, and make sure that you follow at Project Spurs and at the Spurs Cast. Guys, thanks so much. All you listeners out there, you're welcome. See you in 2 days.